from Vermont Public Radio. This is The Frequency. I'm Henry Abb.
And I'm Anna Van Dyne. It's Wednesday, April 7th. Here are today's headlines.
Over a year after imposing a state of emergency that has limited and altered nearly every facet of life in Vermont, Governor Phil Scott yesterday gave us a preview of how it might finally end.
Think of this as a roadmap for the next 3 months as vaccines make it possible to get us back to something more normal.
He's calling it the Vermont Forward Plan.
So, based on our vaccination rates, we're now able to forecast when we'll reach key milestones.
Basically, as certain percentages of the population are vaccinated, more of the state's economy can open up. It's broken up into step one, step two, step three, and July 4th, which is the date that Scott is hoping to achieve relative normalcy in the state. Step one would start this Friday with a change to the state's travel policy. Just a negative test will be required 3 days after travel. No quarantine.
Step two is scheduled for May 1st, when up to 300 unvaccinated people would be allowed to gather outdoors, with no limits on the number of vaccinated individuals.
Step three is planned for June 1st, and it would open up all cross-state travel with no required quarantine periods or testing. And it would allow even larger gatherings of up to 900 people.
And by July 4th, no capacity limits on gatherings. But throughout these steps, the state will still encourage masking and physical distancing when you interact with people outside your household.
And right now, it is still April. And yesterday, the state reported that 106 more people have tested positive for the coronavirus. And the number of cases is expected to go up before falling at the end of the month, according to the state's modeling. In the past week, the most cases per capita have been in Orleans County. Numbers have also been high in Rutland, Chittenden, and Caledonia counties.
The P1 variant, which was first discovered in Brazil, has now been found in Vermont. It may be twice as transmissible and might not respond as well to monoclonal antibody treatment, according to Health Commissioner Mark Levine. This is the third variant confirmed in the state.
And as of yesterday, 42% of Vermonters have received at least one dose of a vaccine. Everyone 16 and up will be eligible in less than 2 weeks.
Coming up, a look at whether the ski industry got more than its fair share of COVID relief money. That's after this. All right, so Anna, it's not particularly pleasant to think back to a year ago, because that was when there was a ton of uncertainty about the coronavirus and the economy was just in total shambles.
Yeah, it was kind of a mess. But to help out a bit, the federal government did give out a bunch of money to states and businesses and individuals to help keep things stay afloat as much as they could while everything was kind of shut down. And to be honest, Henry, I've kind of wondered about what happened with all that money.
Yeah, so have I. And so has our colleague Abigail Giles. And a few months ago, she started looking into how Vermont's COVID relief programs worked and how the money was spent. $330 million in public funds went to private businesses in the state. And she was especially interested in the aid to one very well-known and heavily impacted sector of the economy, Vermont's $1.6 billion ski industry. And Abigail has a really impressive story about this on our website, vpr.org, and I talked with her about it, and she explained why the ski industry made for a good case study for understanding where this money went.
Well, in a normal year, most of the millions of skier visits Vermont gets are from out-of-state visitors who drive from nearby urban markets like Boston or New York. And those people had to quarantine to get here this year. So it's a heavily impacted and diverse industry with a known number of businesses. Those range from volunteer-run nonprofits to family businesses to 900-bed lodging operations. And a lot of Vermont's resorts are now owned by national or international companies. Think Alterra Mountain Company and Vail Resorts. These are big companies that suffered big losses and in some cases received state aid in Vermont. So back in early summer, the legislature was working on a really tight federal deadline for spending COVID relief. And it's important to note that deadline has since been lifted. Programs were rolled out to help businesses replace lost revenue, and the legislature tasked the Scott administration with setting up programs from scratch. In some cases, there were industry-specific programs, some cases broad programs across the Vermont economy, and the ski industry benefited from both.
Okay, so what were the programs that ski areas were eligible for?
So in total, Vermont ski areas received about $5.4 million in state aid. Vermont Alpine Ski Areas got state aid primarily through two programs, the Economic Recovery Grant programs and the Vermont Ski Area Recreation Safety Grants, a smaller $2.5 million program. The Economic Recovery Grants were open to all businesses based in Vermont and essentially replaced up to $300,000 of revenue lost during the pandemic, regardless of additional resources, with very few strings attached. Almost 5,000 businesses got ERGs. Most of them went to small businesses, and those programs were overseen by the Agency of Commerce and Community Development and the Department of Taxes.
Okay, so a $300,000 cap on what businesses could receive. But you found that some ski areas received awards that seemed to fall outside of those parameters set up by the state. So what did you find?
Yeah, so there were two significant limits on the economic recovery grants. Statute dictated that these programs should serve businesses based primarily in Vermont, and they were subject to a $300,000 cap. But the rules used by state agencies to assess these metrics allowed some businesses to get around them. Three entities under Jay Peek's receivership each received the maximum award allowed for a single business, totaling $900,000. And the program's definition of domicile allowed Stratton Corporation and Sugarbush Mountain Resort, which are both owned by Alterra Mountain Company, which owns 14 resorts across the United States and Canada and is headquartered in Denver, to receive the maximum award of $300,000.
All right. And as you mentioned earlier, there are a lot of different types of ski resorts in Vermont. So did some fare better than others in terms of the amount of grant money that they received?
In some cases, that appeared to be the case. Big corporations and wealthy private clubs did seem to fare as well or better than smaller businesses. Looking at the Vermont Ski Area Recreation Safety Grants, the Hermitage Club, a member-owned private ski area in southern Vermont with a $50,000 initiation fee, received the maximum award. In contrast, if you look at Cochrane Ski Area in Richmond, which offers $20 day passes and primarily serves local families, they received a much smaller grant of just over $8,000. The state auditor and others have critiqued the economic recovery grant for falsely equating revenue loss with need. And all of the applications for that program, which contain key details about ownership structure, financials, and actual loss, are not public record, though records for the ski area safety grants are.
Okay, so there's some concerns here about how exactly the money was used. But in terms of when you spoke to ski areas, did they say that this money helped them get through the last year?
Well, Henry, here's Bolton Valley President Lindsay DeLaurier.
The award was extremely helpful. You know, that was that size grant for us, for the size that we are, was really meaningful.
For the economic recovery grants, though, we may never know. Lindsay was talking there about the ski area recreation safety grants, but the economic recovery grants replace lost revenue, and resorts aren't required to report how they spent them, though they do have to keep their receipts in case of an audit. For the ski area safety grants, resorts spent funds on everything from creating a contactless ticketing system at Bolton to purchasing hazmat suits and building private warming huts at the Hermitage Club.
Hmm. Well, in a lot of ways, setting up these aid programs was an experiment, and it happened in a time of economic emergency. So what did legislators have to say now that we've seen some of the results from the programs?
I think it's important to consider that these programs were developed last June. And if you think about where we were last June, the economy was in dire straits and things were very uncertain. So the task for the legislature was twofold. How do you try to figure out where in the economy the need is greatest? And how do you create a program that reaches those people? Legislators saw Vermont's local businesses not only as essential to the character of our state, but to the long recovery our economy will embark on post-pandemic. Here's then-Senate Pro Tem Tim Ash.
We were faced with the very early choice. Do we live in fear that there will be one business that maybe is on the edge of really deserving a grant that gets it, and as a result, slow down the process for thousands of other businesses? Or do we do something that's simple, can be executed quickly, that will provide tremendous benefit almost entirely to businesses that are in desperate need, and accept that there will be some imperfections?
But now it's important to note Vermont has a new pot of funds from the federal government for coronavirus relief with a much longer timeline with which to spend them. So the real question is, how will the legislature allocate those funds and what might relief programs look like going forward?
That's VPR's Abigail Giles. Abigail, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me, Henry.
And you can read all of Abigail's reporting at our website, vpr.org. And just one note, we heard from former Senate President Pro Tem Tim Ash at the end there. And after we recorded that yesterday, the state auditor's office announced that Ash has been named deputy state auditor. And like Abigail mentioned, the auditor's office is looking into the emergency relief grant program, which Ash helped set up.
So, Henry, today is Wednesday, Wildlife Wednesday on this podcast. And this is the sound of spring. And you might think that the sound of spring should be birdsong, and to be honest, I did too, until people started sending in all these recordings of frogs.
Here you go, Henry and Anna. What I've been searching for all afternoon. Got a vernal pool, and I'm gonna try to sneak up on it so that I don't silence all these wood frogs that you hear in the background.
So, Henry, today is Frog Day. We got recordings from Rich in West Newberry, Anne Marie in Waitsfield, Jennifer in Waterford, Donald in Bennington, Keats in Newfane, and my mom.
Well, thanks everyone for your frog sounds. You can send yours to thefrequency@vpr.org.
No more frogs, please.
Yeah. Thanks for listening to The Frequency today. We had additional reporting from Jane Lindholm and Peter Hirschfeld.
Our executive producer is Mark Davis, and our music is by Blue Dot Sessions. I'm Anna Van Dyne.
And I'm Henry Epp. Talk to you tomorrow.